Welcome, all you mighty Marvel fans, to True Believers, the Marvel MCU podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Here on True Believers, we will discuss the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe on Disney+, including the connections to the original Marvel comics and how they relate to the past, current, and future of the MCU universe. Of course, major mighty Marvel spoiler warnings ahead, as we are going to be discussing episode 3 of Hawkeye in this episode. Of course, that's episode 3, Echoes. But you know what? It takes more than one Avenger to get a podcast done, especially when we're talking about Hawkeye. So, of course, I am your host, Kyle. You just call me Captain America. I do have the shield back there to back it up. And of course, joining me, as always, my co-founder here at the Fandom Podcast Network. We nickname him Tiny. He's our Ant-Man, Mr. Kevin Reitzel.
Actually, I have just joined the bros.
Oh.
I got a nice new track suit. I look good?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. But the guy who's probably...
I see our guest cringing because I attempted a Russian accent.
They probably just assume you're trying to say somebody's last name, and that's why it sounded weird.
Yeah, that's probably it. Of course, and the man who you just heard speaking is probably the guy who's actually in charge of the tracksuit mafia, or he's the Thor around here as well. But I don't know if he can actually lift Mjolnir or not. But we haven't tested that fully yet. But Mr. Lee
Felling, of course,
yeah. Oh,
I juggle Mjolnir, man. I'm so worried.
Yeah, but I got Stormbreaker. Well, we are here to talk about Hawkeye, but before we get into that, first of all, you can also check out our Facebook group, True Believers page on Facebook. We keep you updated with all the goings on in the MCU and in the Marvel comic universe as well. And we also have just a quick little few Marvel news tidbits. So get your thwipped, your whipped, and your kapow on, because it's that time to talk a little Marvel news. And of course, the big news was earlier this week, guys, it was announced that Tom Holland is doing another 3 movies within the MCU partnership with Sony. This is pretty big because a lot of people thought Holland was done after this one. And Holland even kind of trolled the internet a little bit the last few weeks, talking about, oh, yes, this felt like the end of an era and all that stuff. Come on. We all knew he was coming back for more, didn't we?
Well, just to clarify, there wasn't... I was under the impression he had a contract with Sony that didn't necessarily confirm any relationship with the MCU going forward. It'd be like a Sony standalone Spider-Man film because they know they got something good with Spider-Man. But this is set up to where, and if I got it right, Kyle, this was kind of his doing. Like, if I'm going to do these Spider-Man movies for Sony here, you're going to work with the MCU, and MCU is going to be part of this. Is this correct?
That is correct. I mean, he pulled this power play even back before when there were talks that Far From Home was going to be the end of his contract. And he kind of pulled this power play once before. But the part of the issue was Kevin Feige was so burned out. He was like, I really don't want to work with another studio. I want to move on to other projects. But Holland played the card and you know, Let's be honest here. Tom Holland holds all the cards where Sony's concerned, because not only is he Spider-Man, he's also Nathan Drake for their big Uncharted film coming up, which they're hoping to make into a big franchise.
They don't want to mess up a relationship with him right now. So
exactly. And Tom Holland has been very clear. He really doesn't want to do Spider-Man unless it's MCU tied in somehow. I think the only just maybe solo Sony project he might end up doing is appearing in a Venom film. But even that now is tied into the MCU. Apparently, I think we're going to find out a lot more about that in a few weeks. What do you think of this, Leah? I mean, to me, it seems like it's the right move.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a good way to extricate that Spider-Man from the MCU at this point. I do think that you could have some movies where it doesn't necessarily have to involve everybody. We could do another Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man sort of thing. But I think keeping it within that framework, and also with everything that they're bringing in from the original Sony movies, you know, kind of making it into this tapestry, I think this might be a little bit longer in the running than we've been led to believe by the news, because we've got both worlds existing now. So I think they've been planning this somehow.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think Holland is just too big of a key piece in all of this.
Real quick though, I thought there was news. Okay. Maybe I'm just thinking back too far where Sony wasn't going to work with Disney MCU, and then they did, and then didn't, and now they did. But there wasn't you know, once, you know, the Spider-Man second film came out, and Endgame and all that came out, there wasn't anything after that saying that Sony's going to go its own direction, was there?
It was more of really Marvel saying, you'd go do what you're going to do. Because Kevin Feige was just like, yeah, I'm kind of done for a little bit. But Sony wouldn't. And Sony was like, our argument was, we're not doing this without Kevin. We're not doing this deal without Kevin Feige's involvement.
And I'm sure Sony likes money. So,
you think, though, I'm just going.
Of course they do. That's why it's called money.
I'm going out right now that before this is all said and done, in this next trilogy, whether it's in this next trilogy or even in this upcoming Spider-Man movie, we're going to start seeing Miles Morales set up here sooner than later. So
a live action, right?
For live action. Yeah. So
we should, I hope so.
Yeah. That was a big piece of Marvel news that broke, but you know, I got to ask you guys one other question because Spider-Man tickets went on sale and there was all kind of, it was like, it was when Endgame came out. I mean, servers were crashing, things like that. So did you guys get Spider-Man tickets? Cause I got a Spider-Man ticket. Kevin.
Oh, I'm going. Yeah.
I've not got my ticket because in my area, the theater rush hasn't quite caught on like it has elsewhere, but also our theaters in our area suck. So if I want to go to a nice theater, I have to drive about 45 minutes south, which I still may consider. I'll see what's available, but I have not gotten my tickets yet. But I do I do want to go to the preview night. So
you got yours, Lee?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely going. I'm bringing a whole bunch of my weirdos. We're trying to figure out what to do. Kind of, we'll probably do the marathon before.
Yeah.
And then kind of see where it goes. But
hold on. Is a marathon going to include just the Tom Holland films? Or are you going to go back and watch the Sam Raimi films and the Garfield films?
That's what we're trying to figure out. Because like I do it all in one day, but most people don't have my fortitude when it comes to movie marathons. So we'd probably do it over the course of a week or two.
Amateurs.
But just to, but just to have it in there. So, yeah. And I would like to revisit the Tobey Maguire ones. I think those are
as long as you stop at Spider-Man 2.
See, here's the thing. Spider-Man 3, there's a few misunderstood parts. Like when all the dorky stuff that Peter Parker is doing, that's his version of what he thinks a cool person is.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
so it's stupid on purpose. You know, like it's not like, oh, he never became cool in real life. Like this is as close as he knows to being cool. And we see that with the other Venom. Like, he's sort of just this jerk and you know, they're trying to live out both their fantasies. So I still like that one. And I think Thomas Hayden Church was amazing.
Oh yeah.
So.
Well, that I'll give you, but yeah, no, it's Spider-Man 3.
He was jacked for that film.
Yeah. Okay. With that, guys, let's not delay any longer because we got, in my opinion, a great, great episode of Hawkeye to talk about. So let's get into it. Hawkeye season 1, episode 3, Echoes. Kevin, would you care to explain to the great listeners out there how we do things here at True Believers?
We don't do segments here on this podcast. We do phases. The plot description is phase 1, give our first reactions, and also we comment on the cast. Phase 2, we go into some trivia. Phase 3 is our plot analysis, our deep dive into the plot and ties to the MCU and comics. And then we head on out with our final episode thoughts, maybe some next week's predictions. So let's get right into it. Hawkeye. Episode 2, Echoes.
Episode 3
aired December 1st. What's that?
You said episode 2. It is episode 3.
Oh, sorry. It is episode 3, yeah. Episode 3, Echoes, it aired December 1st, 2021. And here is a plot description. In a flashback, we see a young, deaf Maya Lopez in school and in a touching scene with her father, William, having a discussion about her struggles. We also see a young Maya in her martial arts class with a prosthetic right leg, defeating a much taller and bigger opponent. Later, a grown-up Maya defeats an opponent in a fighting ring with her martial arts skills. Later that night, she witnesses Ronin killing members of the Tracksuit Mafia, which include her father, where her father dies in her arms. Fast forward to current day, Lopez interrogates Barton and Bishop as they are captured about Ronin, who killed her father in the past. Barton manages to free himself and fend off the Tracksuit Mafia, though Lopez breaks his hearing aid in the process. After Bishop is freed, the pair escapes the Tracksuit Mafia after a harrowing car chase and a variety of trick arrows being used by both Bishop and Barton. soon after Bishop helps Barton hearing aid get fixed. Intending to learn more about the Tracksuit Mafia as well as Duquesne, Bishop convinces Barton to infiltrate Eleanor's penthouse and use her company account to look up Bishop Security's criminal database. However, Bishop is locked out of the system when attempting to bypass security, while Barton encounters Duquesne, who threatens him with Ronin's sword. Let's get some first reactions, Kyle.
Oh, this episode was just fun. This episode, just everything that is what I was hoping out of this series happened in this episode. The great dialogue, the great interaction between Kate Bishop and Clip Barton, the use of the arrows, the chase scenes, the fight sequences. This episode, like I said, just embodied everything. We even get some a great moment with our favorite pizza dog.
This is true. Lee, what are your first reactions?
This is really, I think, the story that we've all been wanting from Clint Barton ever since we saw him in Thor. I mean, this really was a lot of fun. He's sort of the world-weary hero. He's had his hero's journey. I mean, he's gone through everything, and now we kind of see him living in his milieu. And I think, you know, especially with, you know, the other episodes, the way we see him relate to his own heroic nature, how he doesn't want it, he's kind of a reluctant hero, I think it really brought up some beautiful stuff. And this is just fantastic episode.
Agreed. Action-packed, major character development here, and done well. This is how you do a backstory on a new character that makes you care and sympathetic, makes the character sympathetic. When we get the character of Echo, aka Maya Lopez, as a young girl with her father, learning martial arts and witnessing what happened to her father. And I think a lot of movies and television series can learn. I mean, that background scene that we saw, what was that, like 3 minutes, Kyle? You know, I mean, how long was that? It wasn't that long, but it was great. It summed everything up so that when you get into current day, you're like, oh man, I want to like this girl.
Yeah, but then she kind of comes across as maybe not quite so likable, at least in this episode.
Well, I think what's interesting is we have a very similar origin story for her character, as well as, Daredevil, who we know is going to be showing up here shortly in the MCU. And I really do think it's interesting to watch how the same situation can make somebody go one way or another. And I thought that was pretty cool to see that happen. I also, just in watching that, it reminded me of a couple of really interesting people here in the Minneapolis film community. One of them is a fight choreographer named Mike Anderson, who also lives with prosthetics, including a prosthetic leg. And he is one of the most dangerous people I've ever met in my life. He can still kick the crap out of me with prosthetics. And he's probably 20 years older than I am. So I was watching that fight and thinking, all right, cool. Somebody understands, like, it's not necessarily a disadvantage. But there's also one of the craziest, coolest stories, Eric Stolansky, who was Rabbit in the Super Troopers movie, lives here in the cities. And heard a story about him in college. He has a prosthetic leg, but he's living with it his whole life. You'd never know unless he told you the story. But he's trying to impress Jay Chandrasekhar, who's also part of the Broken Lizard group.
Right.
And he started just saying, yeah, we're tough here in Minneapolis. And he starts stapling his leg, like, through his pants. He's just like, ka-chook, ka-chook, ka-chook. He's like, yeah, we're tough, you know? I don't care about you guys from Chicago. We're tough here in Minneapolis. And Jay did not know how that was done for years. They just decided that Eric was one of the craziest people of all time.
We have the introduction of Echo. We know Echo is going to get a spinoff series, played by a beginner Alacqua Cox, basically. She hasn't done a lot of stuff. And she is a deaf actress. And she was fantastic in this. And I want to talk about the cast a little bit here, Kyle.
Just real quick. That is not a camera trick on the prosthetic. That she actually does have that prosthetic in real life, too.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So
Kyle, I have an article here about the actual character of Echo. I got it off of Polygon.com by Susanna Polo. And it talks about, in the first two episodes of Disney Plus's Hawkeye, introduce us to the world, of course, Kate Bishop and Clint Barton. But now in this episode, we get, at the end of the second episode, we get Alacra Cox as Echo. And it says, in the show, just like the Marvel Comics, it seems that Maya Lopez's attention to visual detail is developed into something of a supernatural power, reading and copying body language. Echo first appeared in the pages of Daredevil, created by David Mack and Joe Quesada. Mack was writing the series, and he and Quesada were both providing art. As the antagonist in the comic, she was born deaf and possessed a supernatural ability to perfectly copy the movements of anyone she saw. Pretty much like Taskmaster, the Avengers villain who debuted in MCU in Black Widow. What are your history on this character, Echo, Kyle, since you are a comic book guy?
I read the Daredevil issues where she first appeared. And of course, you know, it's a Daredevil tradition that every new female character that's going to have some kind of role in Daredevil falls in love with Daredevil. So they had a bit of a relationship. Eventually what happens with Echo 2 is a couple of things. First, she actually takes over the Ronin suit for a while. And in the Avengers, and recently she just had a massive power upgrade, as she has become the current host for the Phoenix Force of X-Men fame. So I'm not quite, they're doing a mini series right now with her dealing with all of that. So that's kind of an interesting thing, but yeah. Echo is definitely becoming a bigger part of the MCU in the last few years. And I think that it's very interesting. I think they're doing a very good job with Hawkeye of getting the true nature of the character, even though they might not be following the exact origin, but there are some obvious reasons for that as well. But I think we're going to get into some theories a little later in this episode to talk about some of that.
Lee, I want to get your thoughts on the cast here.
I really have to throw it out. Looking up his name here real quick, Zahn McLaren, who played Maya's father.
Mm-hmm.
I have been a big fan of his ever since he was on a show called Longmire as a reservation officer called Matthias. He has an exceptional range and just a fantastic actor. I love seeing him in everything. He popped up in Westworld and I'm like, woohoo. So really liked him. I really liked that relationship. And like you said, you know, it was a very short bond, but we just kind of get that. I really do think that, like you said, Alacra Cox did an amazing job with that role. I'm really interested in Kazi, played by a guy named Frafi, which, you know, just a great name, but really kind of fun to watch. And I'm kind of wondering about Tony Dalton. As far as cast goes, like, in kind of prepping for this, I went and rewatched, and he really looks like the original Mr. Bishop. I'm wondering if that's a clue to something, but I'll defer to Kyle and his comic book knowledge. So
okay, well, let's save this for phase three because I have some theories that have been floating around on the internet, and I actually kind of agree that these might be theories compared to what a lot of people are thinking right now. So
I just want to touch on Zahn McCarron, who played Maya's father. I love this guy. I've seen him in other stuff. I know he's in Reservation Dogs right now as well, but I remember him in Bone Tomahawk.
Oh yeah.
I liked him in that. And then he was also recently in the new Purge film, The Forever Purge. And then he was also in Doctor Sleep as well. Good character actor, a really good guy. I remember seeing him in Longmire as well. I didn't finish Longmire, but I do remember that as well. I want to give a shout out to the young actress Darnell Bassaw, who played little Maya. Oh, she was great in this. I love the expression that we got from her. And as far as I know, this is her only acting credit. I actually, when I was looking her up on IMDb yesterday, her name wasn't in IMDb. I had to look up an article, and then it finally popped up in IMDb today. I thought that she was great. But Alacra Cox is Maya. My God, how fierce is she? Fantastic. Yeah. Just great. She just came out and literally killed it. And the fact that she shows that she's in charge. you know, even though there's something alluding to someone else that might be above her, which we'll talk about soon.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into some trivia here for phase two. Hawkeye, and now we're going to talk about the arrows in phase three, because I want to get your guys' opinion on your favorites. But I do want to mention that Hawkeye uses the arrow labeled Pym to grow another arrow to gigantic proportions. In the comics, for a while, Hawkeye gave up being an archer to become Goliath. He drank Pym's formula to change size. Plus, they've kind of had a little in the MCU, Hawkeye and Ant-Man have had a little relationship, you know, where in the Avengers film, he's like, "Are you ready?" He shoots the arrow, and as little Ant-Man, he goes, "Yes, arrow guy, I'm ready."
So here's the thing on that particular scene. That is actually one of the most classic Avengers covers of all time, of Ant-Man on an arrow, on an arrowhead, with Hawkeye getting ready to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
Real just quick side thing too on Clint Barton being Goliath. He had a couple different runs as Goliath. One time, because he felt like at the time the Avengers were lacking some muscle, so he took on the role of Goliath after being tested that he could use Pym particles. And then they had a big storyline several years ago, big cosmic thing called Operation Galactic Storm, which dealt with Skrulls and Krees and the Avengers going to outer space. And he just felt being Goliath. He took on the mantle of Goliath again because it felt like, okay, yeah, I'm in space. Arrows aren't going to help me much in space. So.
Although I still do want to see Lawrence Fishburne as Goliath.
Oh, yes.
Black he got Goliath. Teased out. And I want to see him, you know, that big booming voice, yeah. You know, doing something cool. That just has to happen.
During that awesome car chase scene, the music that's playing is Mad Russian's Christmas by Trans-Siberian Orchestra. When Kate draws a new costume for Clint, it's his original purple costume worn when he first appeared as a villain for Iron Man in Tales of Suspense. Kate also mentions a hood, which might be a wink to Green Arrow, DC's archer preceding Hawkeye by decades, or it may be an allusion to the Ronin suit as a way of inducing Clint to spill more information about Ronin's true identity. A substantial excerpt of the car chase scene was previewed in Marvel Studios' 2021 Disney Plus Day special. At the start, when Clint and Kate are arguing about which of them will be doing the driving, at one point, Kate's dialogue is muffled to indicate Clint's hearing problem. In the preview version, this dialogue was audible, and her words are, "No, you drive, I'll shoot." Kyle, I want to ask you real quick about this particular scene. I remember I was watching some stuff on the internet, and of course, this series is based on that famous Hawkeye limited run series that came out in 2012. And a lot of the car chase scene in that reflected what was in this particular scene. Do you remember that? And what did you recollect from that?
It's been a while since I've read that series, but I do remember that somewhat. And yeah, there's some good moments in that, but I mean, to see it play out on live action, I think they did a really good job of pulling it from the comic and putting it on the big screen or on the screen. So
interesting little thing here. Kate has a conversation with one of the tracksuit mafia goons about the music group Imagine Dragons. They sing the main theme for the animated series Arcane, in which Haley Steinfeld voices the character of V. Can we give a shout out to those actors that play like the two main goons underneath, you know, those guys?
Oh yeah,
they're great.
I want those guys to have their own show. I'm just saying right now, those actors were great.
She doesn't even like Imagine Dragons. She does this to hurt me.
So,
well, you need to apologize to her because you got her a present just for you.
Let me go get a pencil. And the guy survived getting shot in the chest from a USB arrow. So, yeah, we'll talk more about that. the deadliest of all arrows. This is speculation, but we're going to talk about it. But I'll just bring it up here real quick. The hand that caresses young Echo's chin in her martial arts class likely belongs to Wilson Fisk, a.k.a. Kingpin. We'll talk about that in phase three. But first, we're going to take a quick break from our True Believers Marvel MCU discussion and let you know what other great podcasts are here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Kyle, why'd you roll your eyes at me there? What was up with that?
I saw that.
Welcome back
to True Believers. You sort of sounded like a comic book guy there.
Yeah, that's kind of
welcome
that
back
it.
To True Believers here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We are talking about Hawkeye, episode 3, Echoes. We are in phase 3, our deep dive into the plot analysis and the ties to the MCU. Kyle, I just want to let you kind of take a hold of this real quick. I have a bunch of observations that we'll touch on. But should we talk about Kingpin now and start off everything?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start off with Kingpin, because that is what everybody is speculating. Everybody's losing their mind. Obviously, Vincent D'Onofrio is not helping the
situation.
Hold on.
Real quick, before I forget. You sure it's Kingpin and not Mephisto?
I'm sure it's Kingpin. And there's definitely no
Mephisto
in this.
I feel like we need to bring
this.
Mephisto up into every single episode.
So but let's talk about this, because the big speculation is of course that Vincent D'Onofrio is making a return as the Kingpin in this series. Vincent D'Onofrio is having fun on social media, getting everybody hyped, and
he's trolling people, isn't he?
I don't necessarily know that he's trolling people, and that could have very well been him. But I want to go back to the other speculation, because there's a scene in this episode where there's a conversation with Maya about, well, the guy who's higher up than you isn't going to like this.
Right.
And everybody's like, oh, they're referring to the Kingpin.
That's what Kazi is saying to Maya.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, they're referring to the Kingpin. Pump the brakes, because I have a theory. I think it is our certain love interest in this film that is being very suspicious, and that Kate has got very interesting thoughts upon. And that, of course, is Jack, who I think we know is going to be the swordsman. And the swordsman was a criminal. And I think what we could be seeing set up is that Jack is in charge of the tracksuit mafia. He used the tracksuit mafia to create a distraction at the auction so he could get the sword. And I think it could be that he is the higher up in this case, which would make a lot of sense. And since we're about to have if they have any ties to between him and Clint Barton, we're about to find out because of how this episode ended. I do think we are going to see the Kingpin in this, though. But I think what we're going to see is the Kingpin in maybe a final stinger in the last episode of Hawkeye.
Where it's Do you think the Kingpin is working with Duquesne?
I think more than likely the Kingpin is going to be like, you don't run things in this city. It goes through me.
So you're calling out that they're not working together.
No, I don't think they're working together. I think the Kingpin's going to show up and be like, yeah, no, this is not authorized in my city. It comes through me.
I have a feeling, and I want to ask your opinion on this, Lee. I have a feeling Duquesne is not necessarily going to be around very long, because I think Vera, Kate's mother, is more involved than we think, and maybe a connection to Kingpin in a certain way. I still think Kingpin is the big Kingpin, and maybe Duquesne is working for him, but I think Vera has some muscle in organized crime that we have yet to see. That's what I think.
Well, I think Jack Duquesne is being set up as like the red herring.
Exactly.
It is very easy to think that he's the one that killed what's his name? The old man.
Right.
In episode one. But I really feel like he's going to be revealed to be like a good guy, but they're setting him up sort of ambiguously. Like, is he just really genuine or is he kind of creepy? But I think with the argument that we see Vera having at the party in episode one, with all the kind of subtle ways that, Vera's involved in everything. And, you know, we can't forget she's also in charge of a big security company. Those generally are the bad guys in all the shows. But I think that there's something fun going on. I have my own theory on who might be involved. Because we keep on talking about dragons. Last time we saw dragons was in Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings. If somebody's going to be using some...
That was an odd thing for them to just be talking about. So, yeah.
Constantly. Well, and he calls her Little Dragon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, Imagine Dragons, we just keep on, dropping the dragon imagery and like the really the only time.
So you think they're going to tie 10 rings to the Kingpin?
I think they're going to tie it to this gang war.
Okay.
But I think that at some point we need to figure out why they were after the watch in episode one. Mm. And I think that that's the breadcrumb that everyone just dropped, because now they're following like the shiny object. Right. But there's something about the watch that it has to come back, unless it's going to be like Owen Wilson's water ski or jet ski. Like, come on,
it's either a very big red distraction or it's Tony Stark's watch. And who knows what's in that thing?
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I just a comment on something that Lee says. I like where he's going with that, because I do think that's something that they are kind of doing in the MCU, and I talked a little bit about this last week, how they're kind of dividing up the MCU into different categories now. And I think they're really going to try to set up this street level category, and involving the Ten Rings in this, mixing in some Daredevil mythos, maybe putting Kate Bishop on that street level kind of thing. I like what Marvel's doing here. And I think a gang war where you bring in the Kingpin, you have the Ten Rings and maybe the Tracksuit Mafia and a few other, we have the MAGA, which are still kind of out there. We still have some Hydra aspects. We could have some very cool things.
Don't you think the Tracksuit Mafia, though, is being run by Kingpin because it was in the comics?
It's possible, but I mean, even still, that's how organized crime can work at times. Just because it's run by the Kingpin doesn't mean it doesn't go, a section of it doesn't go rogue at a point.
If you look at the Russian influence that they had in the Daredevil TV show, kind of the same thing.
And let's not forget, we know Yelena is coming.
This is true. All right, guys, let's talk about the arrows in a great car chase scene that came straight out of those comics. It was teased. We knew it was coming. We get to see how good an archer Kate really is. We also, it's great afterwards that Clint acknowledges that, but we had a lot of very fun Hawkeye arrows, and we've seen a lot of these arrows throughout the MCU and the Marvel films, but they really showcased them in this, and even Kate was questioning them. So I'm going to name them off here, and I want you guys to quickly comment on them and give me your favorite episode 3 Hawkeye arrow. We start off with the Play-Doh / putty arrow, which should have been aimed towards the tires, apparently, not the window. We had the standard gold go-to, the exploding arrow. We had the plunger arrow, which confused Kate at first, but then found out how useful it was. We had the multiple wire / Christmas tree arrow. Well, it included the Christmas trees along with it. We had the acid arrow, which I'm a little confused by, is why did they shoot out the traffic lights? That didn't really seem to have any effect on the scene. Then we had the purple smoke arrow. We had the return of the USB arrow, which made an appearance in the Avengers 2012 film when, of course, Clint was under the spell of the of Loki and you know the cool Destiny glow stick he had. And then, of course,
and let's not forget it was in What If. It was the arrow that saved the universe.
That's right. That's true. That's right. Well played, sir. And then, of course, we had the PIM arrow, which turned a regular arrow into a large arrow and destroyed the Tracksuit Mafia's truck. And then we had, now people call this the grappling hook arrow, but I don't know if it's an actual arrow or it's just part of the bow, because you see it shoot out of the center of the bow, and this is the grappling hook. Kyle, when I was looking at this scene closely, it looks like it shoots out of the center of the bow itself, not an actual arrow. It's part of a trick part of his actual bow. But they do have, he does have grappling hook arrows though, right?
Yeah. But it looks like it is part of his bow, like it's triggered by going through that one slot in
here. Yeah, and he's used that several times before. Yeah. It's kind of his go-to, I'm going to jump off the building and turn around superhero while I shoot something and then use that to save myself type of thing. So guys.
Like he did in the opening scene of episode one.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So guys, what was your favorite arrow? And what did you think of that scene, Lee?
Oh, geez. I'm going to go with the USB arrow. It has done some damage in its day and it gets overlooked. I'm also the IT guy. So, you know, I think.
Well, she used it as a bluff and it stopped Echo and the Tracksuit Mafia in their, you know, in their advance, you know, to distract them. Mm-hmm. And then she shoots the big guy with it and pulls us off.
Well, I think it would have worked, but it was upside down. She just needed to turn it so that it would go in.
How many times have you put a USB in wrong, guys? Come on.
Exactly.
Well played, Lee. Kyle, what's your favorite arrow?
I got to take a PIM arrow. I mean, come on. You give me some PIM particles, I can have a lot of fun with that. The fact it even says PIM on the side of the arrow is just great. I mean, come on. But, I mean, you know, the plunger arrow. I mean, that's the most useful arrow ever. Come on.
And it's also the first arrow any would-be archer would shoot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's usually the first arrow you get with any toy bow and arrow, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, that brings up something interesting. Now, Hank Pym has always been kind of anti-Avenger. I want to know the story of how Hawkeye ended up with that arrow, because that obviously seems...
I think it has to do with his friendship with Scott Lang. I think they have... Because remember, they spent time in jail together, so they had time to talk.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they got a little bit of a kind of a... Not a bromance, but they got a friendship going on, and I'm sure he hooked him up. That's my theory, Kyle.
Oh, I'm definitely feeling that, but like Pym had to make that specifically. Like, he's the guy. Like, that's... I want to know that story. I just want to see Hawkeye and, Michael Douglas just chilling.
That would be a good scene. I got to tell you, just for comedic effect, I love the Play-Doh putty arrow.
Oh, that was good too.
Yeah.
But you got to shoot it at the tires, Kevin.
I was crazy. I tell you, Haley Steinfeld just sold that. Like, really? A Play-Doh, mm-hmm. And then you realize that she should have done it for the tires, or it probably gums up the tires or something like that. But I just thought it was pretty funny.
When I did like the comment, like maybe if you labeled these, I'd know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are some other funny scenes. I love the fact that their hideout was an old defunct KB toy store. Rest in peace, KB toy stores. Cause I love them. The pool ball scene, I thought was very funny. I was kind of hoping that when Hawkeye jumped out of it, he would have said Bazinga.
Yep. I got to say, like, I've been to a lot of KB Toys. I've never been to one that cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one that made me a little homesick, but I'm like,
yeah,
I just felt robbed. Like, come on.
And Lee, I know you'd appreciate this. Like, I'm not smashing a 72 Challenger. Come on. I'm going to take a Caddy instead.
Yeah. Well, and I got sad just like everybody else, you know, when that Challenger bit the dust.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful car. And there's no way that the Caddy is outrunning
it. Speaking of the car chase scene, how they filmed, like when you see Kate stepping outside of the window of the car to get ready to start shooting the arrows, I thought was brilliantly shot, the way they kind of did this shot. Maybe it was against a green screen or whatever, but if it was done really well. It did not look like special effects. It was a fantastic scene of her getting out and getting ready to shoot some arrows and stuff. I thought that was just a great scene. A really good car chase, funny, just really, really, really well done. Before we move on from the car chase scene, Kyle, did you have any more thoughts on it?
Oh, I'm just going to say I have 4 more arrows that are more dangerous than those arrows.
I'd also say the camera work in that was just
brilliant. Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly.
It was beautifully filmed. It was beautifully executed. It was the highlight of the episode by far, and it's the highlight of the series.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I thought the scene was very sweet. And let's give a shout out to Jeremy Renner and his acting here when Kate is helping Clint with his family phone call while he doesn't have his working hearing aid. Kind of gut-wrenching and just feeling for him, like he needs to be home with his family and freaking he can't hear his own son talking, you know?
Well, and the thing that killed me the most in that is remembering that that kid is named for Natasha and Pietro, who are now both dead.
Yeah.
Saving him, you know, like what that kind of guild has to be.
Yeah.
You know, really is quite something.
And I had to watch it again because I didn't catch the text, but in one of the funniest scenes when they're waiting outside to get his hearing aid at the store to open to get his hearing aid repaired, Kate sends him a text saying, "Good thing they call you Hawk Eye, not Hawk Ear." And he goes, "Ha ha ha, block delete." Okay, guys. This discussion is important when they're sitting down. A lot of stuff is brought up here, and I think we need to, dissect it a little bit. Clint's quote, "This life comes with a price," discussion with Kate, which also leads to discussion of the costume branding issue. And she hand draws like an original, like Hawkeye costume from the comics on there. Then it leads into the Ronin question that Kate thinks that Clint is protecting. And that Clint says in his job, he has to be a ghost. Lee, a lot to chew on this. Thoughts on that scene?
I thought it was really well shot. I feel like Kate knows that he's Ronin.
You think so?
At that point, the way that she's leading those questions and the way that she's like, it's somebody close to you. Like I think that she knows and she's trying to get him to open up about it. The costume, to me, that just made me laugh because my introduction to Hawkeye was in the arcade game where he was the worst possible character to play and he sucked. but I thought that was really interesting, the branding, the whole thing about him being a ghost. Especially, you know, like one of the things I did right before I watched this series was rewatched Black Widow. And you kind of see like the life that she was trying to lead and all that sort of stuff and what she had been called to do and that strain, like how both of them kind of have this anonymity taken away from them. And I think it also like that ties to the interrogation when they're on the little hobby horses or whatever at the beginning.
Put another quarter where he's like, in them.
Yeah, the Ronin's dead, you know, who killed him? Natasha Romanoff. You know, they start talking about that. I feel like he is trying to tell as much of the truth as he can from a certain point of view. But it was a really powerful scene, and it's the kind of thing that makes me think this could be a really good show instead of just fun.
Yeah, Kyle, a lot of, like I said, a lot of chew on that scene there. What were your thoughts on that?
I think it was a very important scene because I think that's like one of the themes that was kind of running out of the Hawkeye scene when he's training Kate Bishop is like, are you really sure you're ready for everything you're going to be dealing with here and what you're going to give up? And I think it's actually executes really well here because you have Kate who's just so gung-ho and ready to do this and Clint's trying to make it as realistic for her as possible. It's like, this isn't fun and games. This isn't, you know, the excitement of it and stuff like that. There are major prices to pay. And I think it's been a nice touch that they've done throughout this first three episodes too, is you actually see that price with Clint. You know, he's going through the PTSD, the hearing issues. You're seeing him constantly having to bandage himself up. He's grabbing bags of peas out of the freezer, things like that. You know, especially with Kate being a normal human going into this superhero world. And I think there's still going to be more that's going to be addressed with that. But yeah, I think what they're doing is they're mixing the good quality of fun, but giving, not getting lost in this is the humanization factor of this. And I think it's really the first MCU project, in my opinion, that's really kind of told a story from a human level. You know, you're looking at it not from a superpowered level or anything like that. Everybody in this to this point is human. They don't have superpowers. They don't have anything. Now, I think we're going to see a little bit of change in that maybe before the series is over, nothing drastic, but you know, you're going to get a little bit more superhero elements at the aspect of when Yelena comes in and if the Kingpin does come in and things like that. But it's very humanizing. And I think it's probably the most relatable project, at least on Disney Plus, that they've done so far.
Agreed. Totally. I want to just mention on that scene, Kate seems to be fueled by her feelings towards her father in this. And it mirrors what's happening with Maya Echo, which I think is great. You're kind of seeing two different sides of the coin here. She wants to kind of be this hero, but you know, Clint's like, you know, you're going to pay for it in a certain way. You know, there's things you're gonna have to sacrifice. And I feel like I'm seeing her when she's listening to him. And this is where Haley's a great actress, that she's juggling those options inside her brain and this, you know, and to see where this is going to head. So, well said, guys. This was a really, really well balanced episode because you had the action, you had the drama, you had the backstory on our so-called villain here, or one of them who we know will eventually become a hero. But the biggest point of this story that we really need to discuss, Kate mentioned the dog names, guys, and there's one that's missing. So I got to ask you guys, she mentions, because it was kind of funny how they had the little thing on the train about he can't hear Kate, you know, like maybe you should walk the dog. And she mentions little old Caesar, dog father, Sir Dog of Pizza, pizza dog. It's lucky, as far as we know. Do we think we're going to get a scene where he deserves that name or earns that name, Kyle?
I think so, but you notice how he perked up at the sound of Pizza Dog.
He did, because he likes pizza, mm-hmm. obviously. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was good. Lee, what are your thoughts?
I'd be okay if like it was never said. I like him just being dog, like Daryl's dog on Walking Dead, something like that. I think, you know, if they were to call it Arrow, that'd be kind of funny, because you know, that was the original name of the dog in the comics, if I'm not mistaken. Kyle, you can correct me on that. But I'm interested to see where they go with the dog. And I feel like we've already had a little bit of luck, because the dog led Kate to the auction in the first mm-hmm. place, kind of setting off the story. Right. And I'm wondering, because the dog does have one eye, and we know that certain Asgardians are shapeshifters, and certain Asgardians have lost an eye. If maybe this is some sort of supernatural character that we're waiting to find something out about.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, Kyle, you shared a really cool pictures on our True Believers MCU page regarding Lucky and Kate.
Yeah, they apparently bonded quite well on set. Yeah, I shared a post of several pictures of Haley and our favorite pizza dog, just spending some quality time together on set.
They were adorable. She was just loving on that dog in between takes, and the dog was just loving it too. It was really sweet.
Yeah, so it was. But Kevin, I want to bring up something because it's something that I thought just was so fitting in this episode, and that is the music they used for the closeout credits.
No. Mm-hmm. I'm taking credit for this one. Okay.
Okay, I got to hear how you're taking credit for this.
Well, first of all, because I put it in the notes. But as it was playing, we have the song Sweet Gingerbread Man by Sammy Davis Jr. As I was listening to the song, I was going, why does this sound familiar? And I had to Shazam it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is Sammy Davis Jr. And he's only known for like a couple of songs, at least in my brain. And he's part of the original Rat Pack. He's legendary, Vegas performer. But listening to this song, I had never heard of it before. It needs to be entered into my my holiday music list now. And when you listen to this, you realize how good a singer Sammy Davis was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was phenomenal. But I mean, just to have this song close out this episode of Hawkeye, it's oddly fitting, you know, going with the Christmas theme and stuff like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I thought it was a great choice and a fun choice. And it just capped off. It was an absolutely joyous episode of Hawkeye.
Yeah, it was. Well, let's get into face.
Can we just say, like, this is the new Christmas playlist, is whatever they play on Hawkeye. They're making some really good.
Yeah.
Non-standard, you know, Christmas songs.
Yeah. When this series ends, I'm going to go back and like take inventory of all these songs.
Listen up, Marvel. We need the Hawkeye Christmas Spotify playlist.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, guys, let's get into our final phase. Phase four here. Let's give your final thoughts and any next week's predictions. Because, guys, we got a little bit of a cliffhanger, you know. Duquesne got Ronan's sword at Hawkeye's neck. Final thoughts first on the episode, Lee, and what do you think's going to happen?
Froze up on me. Sorry, everything froze up on
me. That's right, we're back.
Did you ask me a question?
Oh, you used the ice arrow, didn't you, Lee?
Pretty much, yeah.
Did you put the USB in the wrong way again?
just turned it around.
I said, I want your final thoughts, Lee, and give us predictions for next week's episode, because it kind of ended on a little bit of a cliffhanger with Duquesne holding Ronan's sword at Cliff's throat.
I think one of my final thoughts that I had on this kind of goes back a little bit, but the kind of this crazy pinnacle moment for both of them is Clint swinging off the building while Kate is watching. And at one point in episode two, she asks, you know, how'd you lose your hearing? And he literally, the next scene is him crashing through the window on that cable and like starting both his story with this injury and her story of becoming an archer and trying to be a superhero and all the trauma that comes through. So I feel like there's going to be some sort of, you know, to use the common term, trauma bonding that they have from this moment if they both are able to bring it up to each other. And I'm starting to see them getting a little bit closer. I think it's going to be an awkward dinner with Clint and Jack. But you know, they've also got two of the manliest names ever, and you know, they're both masters of arcane weaponry. So I think whatever happens, it's going to be cool. I would like to see a fight. You know, some really good sword fight. I'm predicting, you know, kind of like you guys have said, that Vera Farmiga is not exactly the best person. And I would like to see her as maybe the bad guy behind all of this. Mm. I want to see her fight somebody. Because she's alluded to, you know, knowing a few, a thing or two. And she also had that line in the first episode, it's my job to protect this family.
Right. True.
And I feel like she may have made some choices for that protection. But I also really want to see where they're going with Echo. Because that is a very interesting character to drop in, then drop out. And I'm intrigued just to see what happens. You know, she might also even be part of Agent Carter's little clandestine operation as well.
Okay, Kyle, I got a couple observations and things that I learned. Mm-hmm. I learned that Echo ends up working for Kingpin and then turns against him. I also learned that Kazi actually caused Hawkeye's hearing impairment with his own arrows, I think jamming them into his head or his ear or something like that in one of the comics. But, you know, Lee brought up some interesting stuff here of what could be happening in the next episode. What is your take?
Okay, first of all, on this episode, there's one thing it's a phenomenal episode. It might be one of the best episodes of Disney Plus television for Marvel we've gotten so far. And there's one thing we haven't addressed yet that I do want to address. And again, I'm talking about the humanizing factor of this episode. I love the conversation between Maya and Clint when Maya is telling him, quit being so weak, quit using your crutch, meaning the hearing aid.
Yes.
And I really like that. I like that from both perspectives. And I think that's something that I think the hearing loss is something that's going to be played up on the rest of the way. I think there's going to be a lot more to that before it's all said and done. So I just wanted to make sure to address that. Again, this episode is phenomenal. In my opinion, it is one of the most fun episodes of anything Disney Plus we've gotten so far. Excuse me. As far as predictions for next week, I think it hinges on something. It hinges on, do they play up a connection between Jack and Clint that existed in the comics? Because the swordsman was the man who, if Jack is the swordsman that they're hinting at, the swordsman was the man who trained Clint Barton. So are we going to find out when either Jack realizes who Clint is or Clint realizes who Jack is, are they going to play up some kind of connection there? So I'm curious to see that, because I think that will define a lot of directions of which way Hawkeye is going to go. I do think it's going to get very interesting very quickly. We've only got 3 episodes left of this show. We still have yet to see Yelena. We don't know what the deal is with if the Kingpin is going to show up. I am pretty sure at some point in this series, whether it's a stinger or something, we will be seeing the Contessa again. I think the Contessa will be doing some more recruiting. Maybe it's Jack, maybe it's Maya, maybe it's somebody else, but I think we will see Contessa again as well. As far as next episode, I think it is we're going to probably start open with up with a good fight between Jack and Clint. Maybe we get this more of the backstory be with Jack in this episode. I think that it probably leads into something where we're going to find out if D'Onofrio is going to be a part of this. Maybe Yelena. I think maybe there's a good chance Yelena shows up by the end of this, by the end of episode 4.
Okay.
So
I have to interject here, and Kevin will appreciate this. If they are old friends, Jack and Clint, and they have a sword fight, I want it to be like the sword fight between Connor and Ramirez in Highlander 2. Just two old buddies getting back together.
Oh, you know, I love it when you bring Highlander moment. References into other podcasts there, Lee, because you're my co-host.
I kind of got it. Well, and like, we got two sword guys. Yeah. And,
okay, so that brings up a question I wanted to ask you before I was thinking as we close out here. So as far as we know within the MCU, not counting the comics here, of what the public and the what they know of Hawkeye is that he obviously is very good at the bow and arrow. But when he went to Ronin and not telling anyone, he was the sword guy. Okay. So my question is, remember the movie Quigley Down Under with Tom Selleck?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember how good he was with the long rifle and, you know,
yeah.
Mr. Okay. And how he alluded to, like, with pistols, he says he never had any use for them, but you found
doesn't
out
mean I didn't know how to use one.
But you found out at the very end with the duel against Professor Snape himself, or you know, Hans himself, Mr. Alan Rickman, that he was very good with the pistol and he beat him in that duel at the end. Do we know? Do the villains know? Do people that work with Barton know how good he is with the sword? So this brings up the question with Duquesne, Lee. Maybe they do know each other. I don't know whether they do or not. Do we find out, and does Kate find out, does Duquesne find out how good he actually is with a sword, not just a bow?
I certainly hope so. I think that'd be really fun, bringing that in. I think it would also be a great button to the conversation that he had with Kate in the diner about the things that you lose along the way.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be humanity and mercy and, you know, like that right and wrong. Because it seems like, Renner is a fantastic actor and there's a lot always going on underneath the surface with him. And I think that that might be one of those under the surface things that will start to come out.
Kyle, outside of Ronan, which no one knew who he was except for his closest friends in Avengers compound, know that he's really good at the sword. Well, is that going to play into the rest of this the series?
I think again, it depends on what direction they take with, do Jack and Clint know each other? And because, you know, in the comics, it made sense that Clint would be Ronin and good with the sword because of his history of being trained by the swordsman initially. Here, I think probably the only people who really knew he would be good with the sword would be Nick Fury, maybe Black Widow, and maybe Maria Hill.
Right, right.
So,
well, if I may, we also do know that the footage from the airport fight was available. And we do see him fighting with his bow as a staff, like it, you know, changed form. Mm-hmm. So we know that he is, you know, skilled with the close range weapon. Right. So I don't know that it would be too much of a surprise to anybody that he'd be able to do that.
Well, yeah, but I think still to be that skilled with a sword, I mean, and the whole Ronin thing, it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I think the whole episode hinges right out of the gate about this. If they're going to play up a connection between Jack and Clint, and that I think will dictate the direction of maybe the entire series at that point.
Yeah. Outside of that, I'm not sure what's going to happen next episode. I do hope that we get another layer of the villains behind the curtain, you know, whether it is Vera Farmiga's character or another tease to Kingpin. But I'm really curious, as you kind of alluded to, is the red herring type possible villain character that Duquesne could turn out to be. I hope there's more to that and we'll see what happens with him. So very curious. So
can I take one moment to comment on something?
Sure.
I think that Hailee Steinfeld is doing an amazing job with the fight choreography of being somebody who is finding out what she's actually capable of. In all of her moves, they're very, you know, obviously practiced. You know, they've established her with a skill set as a martial artist and as an archer. But it's the first time she's putting it to practice. And watching her as an actor and as the character realize, oh, this works, that works. I tried to do this for a film a few years ago, and it's very hard to communicate physically and very hard to communicate as an actor. And as the fight choreographer, to communicate it to the actor, what you want them to not only perform physically, but portray emotionally. It's one of the hardest things you can get somebody to do. And that she is this young and able to do this trick that I haven't figured out how to do yet. And I've been doing this for a long time. I really want to give her props for just the amazing fights that she's doing.
It's interesting you bring that up, and I'm glad you did, Kyle, because the one thing that I think Clint is going to teach Kate, she has the skills, but I think he's also going to teach her on how to use them more strategically and knowing when not to use them and how to use mm-hmm. them, as opposed to just being a good shot. And the tricks of the trade on how her bow can be utilized more than she has ever learned from it before. So
yeah,
Kyle, take us home.
Okay. It's time to get out of here, which means it's time to tell you where you can find not only True Believers, but all the great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. And it starts, of course, on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com, where we host all of our great podcasts. Shoot over there, check out everything. We got a lot of great stuff going on. Of course, you can also find our YouTube channel, so give us a subscription there. Also, too, we are on all pretty much major podcasters, whether it's iTunes, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network everywhere. Of course, again, a reminder, visit our great Facebook group, True Believers. So we keep you, like I said, we try to have a little fun and keep you updated with what's going on in the MCU. And of course, too, there's a couple great ways to support the Fandom Podcast Network. We love reviews, of course. So especially Apple Podcasts, iTunes, leave us a review. As always, we appreciate the reviews because it lets us know what we need to improve on, what we need to work on, and hopefully tells us that you're enjoying what we're doing. And of course, to TeePublic, where you can find all the gear of the Fandom Podcast Network. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network or type in the name of your favorite show on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you'll find the gear, whether it be t-shirts, hoodies. You know, we don't have any quivers or bows yet. We're working on it. What can I say? But
we're working on it.
Yeah, if you want to contact us to, like I said, the Facebook page of True Believers or for the Fandom Podcast Network, you can email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, or on Twitter at FanPod Network. I am your host, Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram, AKyleFandom, home of Pim Particles. Just saying. Kevin, where can people find you when you're not feeding pizza dogs?
Of course, you can find me on the True Believers Facebook page there for our MCU family. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix, and is, of course, on Facebook.
And Lee, before we completely lose you to the pit of balls over in the KB Toy Store, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me hiding around the corner with a sword, waiting to surprise you. Otherwise, you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at The Way of the Way, or just reach out directly to me on Facebook.
Of course. Now, we also have a tradition around here. We are continuing Kevin's growing education with Marvel Comics and the MCU. So, as always, it's time to award Kevin some Excelsior points this week.
Woohoo!
Now, if you remember last episode, we awarded Kevin some arrows, you know, below arrow, so he could, you know, tennis ball trick arrow. Yeah, have you been practicing?
Yeah, yeah, they sucked. So, yeah, they just kept bouncing off, you know. And they don't hurt anyone. You did not
take on a bell tower with a tennis ball arrow.
No, the dogs went nuts for them, but that was it.
Well, you know, okay. Either way, you've earned you did a good job because bringing up the Sammy Davis Jr. and all that stuff. So we're going to award you 4 Excelsior points this week.
Nice. What can I give those?
4 Excelsior points. I was debating, you know, depending on how things went with the tennis ball. Kevin, we're going to add to your quiver, but it's going to be a suction cup arrow.
Hold on. Did you notice, though, that when he retrieved the suction cup arrow off the top of the car, there was a little bit of electric thing that popped up from it? So there's a little something to that suction cup arrow. I'm just saying. I'll take it.
and of course, we're going to give you the Play-Doh arrow.
Oh, yes. Score!
But, you know, I'm sorry. You just haven't improved enough to get the use of the ultimate USB arrow yet.
I probably put it in wrong anyway.
Yeah, well, more than likely. And I still have 4 more arrows that are much more dangerous. So. With that, we're going to close out of here. We want to thank all you amazing Marvel fans for listening to us. Our next episode will be episode 39, where we will cover episode 4 of Hawkeye. And until then, as we like to tell you, Excelsior. And as always, make ours Marvel.